You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on Nonviolent Communication. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life by Marshall B. Rosenberg, Ph.D. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. Believing that it is our nature to enjoy giving and receiving in a compassionate manner, I have been preoccupied most of my life with two questions. What happens to disconnect us from our compassionate nature, leading us to behave violently and exploitatively? And conversely, what allows some people to stay connected to their compassionate nature under even the most trying circumstances? While studying the factors that affect our ability to stay compassionate, I was struck by the crucial role of language in our use of words. I have since identified a specific approach to communicating, both speaking and listening, that leads us to give from the heart, connecting us with ourselves and with each other in a way that allows our natural compassion to flourish. I call this approach nonviolent communication, using the word nonviolence as Gandhi used it, to refer to our natural state of compassion when violence has subsided from the heart. End quote. Marshall B. Rosenberg from Nonviolent Communication. Based on Gandhi's ideal of nonviolence, nonviolent communication, or NVC for short, is also known as compassionate communication. I think it could also be appropriately described as effective communication, as the cover of the book declares, more than 1 million copies sold for one simple reason: it works. I've been planning to read this book for quite some time, and after seeing both Brené Brown, see notes on Daring Greatly plus The Gifts of Imperfection, and Kristen Neff, see notes on self-compassion, raving about this book, I decided now was the time. I was blown away by the goodness. I'm inspired by not only the theory and practices laid out in the book, but by Marshall B. Rosenberg's lifetime commitment to mastering communication and helping us, as he would say, create a compassionate flow between ourselves and others based on mutual giving from the heart. I have a link in the PDF to get the book, and you can learn more about Marshall and nonviolent communication. I believe that it is cnvc.org. I've got a link in the PDF. For now, let's jump in and take a quick high-level look at NVC, along with a few of my favorite big ideas. The first big idea: what is nonviolent communication? Quote, nonviolent communication, NVC, guides us in reframing how we express ourselves and hear others. Instead of habitual, automatic reactions, our words become conscious responses based firmly on awareness of what we are perceiving, feeling, and wanting. We are led to express ourselves with honesty and clarity, while simultaneously paying others a respectful and empathic attention. In any exchange, we come to hear our own deeper needs and those of others. NVC trains us to observe carefully and to be able to specify which behaviors and conditions are affecting us. We learn to identify and clearly articulate what we are concretely wanting in any given situation. The form is simple, yet powerfully transformative. Well, there's nonviolent communication in a nutshell. We want to move from our habitual, automatic reactions to a more conscious approach of what we are perceiving, feeling, and wanting. Let's take a quick peek at how we can do that. Next big idea, the four components of the NVC process. Quote, to arrive at a mutual desire to give from the heart, we focus the light of consciousness on four areas, referred to as the four components of the NVC model. First, we observe what is actually happening in a situation. What are we observing others saying or doing that is either enriching or not enriching our life? The trick is to be able to articulate this observation without introducing any judgment or evaluation, to simply say what people are doing that we either like or don't like. Next, we state how we feel when we observe the action. Are we hurt, scared, joyful, amused, irritated? And thirdly, we say what needs of ours are connected to the feelings we have identified. An awareness of these three components is present when we use NVC to clearly and honestly express how we are. For example, a mother might express these three pieces to her teenage son by saying, "Felix, when I see the two balls of soiled socks under the coffee table and another three next to the TV, I feel irritated because I am needing more order in the rooms we share in common." She would follow immediately with the fourth component, a very specific request. "Would you be willing to put your socks in your room or in the washing machine?" This fourth component addresses what we are wanting from the other person that would enrich our lives or make life more wonderful for us. So there you go, the four components of the NVC process: observations, plus feelings, plus needs, plus requests. Let's unpack them a bit more. Number one, we observe behaviors that affect our well-being. The key and trick here is to simply observe, not judge. Note that the mom in the example above didn't say, "Felix, you're incredibly lazy and unthoughtful. I've asked you 973 times to not leave your socks laying around. I can't believe that you can't do something so simple." That wouldn't be observing and that wouldn't be too effective. We stick to the specific observable facts, leaving evaluation out of it. That's number one. Number two, we state how we feel about our observations. Marshall spends a considerable amount of time coaching us on how to actually get in touch with our feelings. Most of us are not in touch with our feelings. Bringing more awareness to how we feel, learning how to articulate those feelings, and then having the courage to be vulnerable as we do so is very much a learned skill. That's number two. Number three, we state the needs that create our feeling. Underlying all of our feelings are unmet needs. We want to shine the spotlight of our awareness here. Rather than complain, criticize, blame, and otherwise throw ick-sauce on others, we want to slow down and identify what we need in any given situation. By communicating from this perspective, rather than criticizing, we're much more likely to get those needs met. Hence, we could call nonviolent communication simply effective communication. That is number three. Component four, we make a request for concrete actions that will enrich our lives. How can our needs be met? We make that request in concrete, specific terms. One more time through our four components: observations, plus feelings, plus needs, plus requests. Note that this process works on the receiving end as well. We want to empathically listen in such a way that we are attuned to the observations, feelings, needs, and requests of the individual with whom we're communicating. All of this is, of course, easier said than done, as we have a lifetime of habits that point us in a different communication channel. Marshall brilliantly walks us through each of these four components with a chapter dedicated to each in the book. Once we wrap our minds around the concepts, it's all about practice, practice, and more practice. And that leads us to the next big idea. What gets in the way? Quote, "It is our nature to enjoy giving and receiving compassionately. We have, however, learned many forms of life-alienating communication that lead us to speak and behave in ways that injure others and ourselves. One form of life-alienating communication is the use of moralistic judgments that imply wrongness or badness on the part of those who don't act in harmony with our values. Another is the use of comparisons, which can block compassion for others and for ourselves. Life-alienating communication also obscures our awareness that we are each responsible for our own thoughts, feelings, and actions. Communicating our desires in the form of demands is yet another characteristic of language that blocks compassion." End quote. So, what gets in the way of compassionate communication? Life-alienating communication. Marshall spends a chapter helping us see the primary obstacles, which include moral judgments, constantly making something or someone good or bad, such as, "He's a bad person, that's just wrong." Comparisons. Marshall tells us comparisons are just another form of judgment and walks us through a hilarious example of how we make ourselves miserable. For example, just compare yourself to the supermodel hot people on the covers of magazines at your local grocery store, or to your life vis-a-vis Mozart when he was 12 years old. The guy spoke, I don't know how many languages, had composed whatever he'd composed. It's insane. Not helpful. Denial of responsibility. This is another big one. Marshall dedicates an entire chapter to the fact that we need to take 100% responsibility for our own thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. Other people's behaviors may be a stimulus for our response, but they are never the cause. That's a huge distinction. More on that in a moment. And finally, making demands rather than requests is another example of life alienating communication. Making a demand is not a compassionate way to communicate. No one likes to feel coerced into behavior. And even if they do comply, they do so out of fear and guilt rather than autonomy and love. It's much more compassionate and effective to walk through the four steps and clearly state our needs and requests. So those are our four examples of life alienating communication that get in the way. What's the solution? Our four steps of NVC, observations without evaluation, plus feelings, plus needs, plus requests. Next big idea, taking responsibility for our feelings. Quote, the third component of NVC entails the acknowledgement of the root of our suffering. NVC heightens our awareness that what others say and do may be the stimulus, but never the cause of our feelings. We see that our feelings result from how we choose to receive what others say and do, as well as from our particular needs and expectations in that moment. With this third component, we are led to accept responsibility for what we do to generate our own feelings, end quote. This is huge, all caps, and such a brilliant application of what we talk about all the time in these notes. The fact that nothing outside of us is responsible for how we feel, think, and behave. Marshall kicks off the chapter on taking responsibility for our feelings with this quote from Epictetus. People are disturbed not by things, but by the view they take of them. He then proceeds to apply that wisdom to our communication. Let's take a moment to chat about it in more detail. I'll also give a personal example from last night to bring the idea home. The super big idea we really want to get, what others say may be the stimulus to our feelings and responses, but it is never, 3 exclamation points, the cause. That's really, really important to wrap our brains around and bring into our lives. Someone says or does something that annoys us. We almost always think it's what they said that made us upset, but it never, all caps, is. What they said or did may have triggered something within us, but it is always how we choose to interpret and respond to that stimulus that determines how we feel. Period. We've talked about this a million or so times. What I'm so excited about is that Marshall presents such an amazing application of this truth to our communication patterns. He brilliantly points out that our feelings are always tied to an unmet need. Rather than blaming someone else, we simply need to take 100% responsibility, identify plus own how we're feeling, and then identify the unmet need that is at the root of the whole situation. Then, of course, make a request that helps us meet that need. Let's use me as an example. Alexandra, Emerson, and I go on a family walk every night. Love it. Last night, we were about a quarter of the way across the street in a crosswalk when someone drove right through the crosswalk ahead of us. It wasn't even that close, but I immediately had a triggered response and started criticizing the guy in my head. Wonderful things like, didn't you see us? Are you an idiot? Do you not pay attention? Jeez, etc., etc., etc. Now, having just read this book, I thought to myself, interesting. You're blaming this person for how you're feeling and making moral judgments about their character. Fascinating. What would Marshall do? How are you feeling right now? What's the underlying unmet need you're experiencing? Because that's what's at the root of this. Let's explore that. It was fun to roughly go through the four components last night. Won't pretend I did it perfectly because I didn't, but it goes something like this. 1, observe. What did I observe? Without judgment, what objectively happened? Well, someone drove their car through the crosswalk as we were a quarter of the way through it. Okay, cool. 2, feelings. What feelings did I experience? Interesting. I felt unsafe. I felt fear. Okay. Good thing to notice. 3, needs. What unmet needs was I experiencing? This is the source of everything. I have a need to help my family feel safe, to protect them from danger. I got a little misty-eyed as I typed that. That need was not being met as the individual drove through the crosswalk. Well, that's amazing to see. Now it's 4, the request. What would my request be to the driver, if I could make it? My request would be that he or she drive under the speed limit while driving through town and exercise more caution when approaching crosswalks. Well, that's a cool process. So quick recap. The unconscious version of me would just take the event and get upset and blame the driver for making me mad. In quotes, making me. Then I'd potentially share my frustration with Alexandra, and we'd talk about how unconscious people can be. Nice projection on my part. The conscious version of me can see that, although their behavior was a stimulus, it was not the cause of my response. Now, the best part of the whole thing, parenthetical aside here, was that just a day before, I had accidentally driven in front of a family about a quarter of the way through a crosswalk. My heart skipped a beat. I apologized, and the dad said, "No worries." Ah, life. How about you? Any recent experiences that might be good for a quick trip through the process? Here's to taking 100% responsibility for our feelings while identifying the unmet needs at the root of the issue and compassionately communicating with ourselves and others. Next big idea, what do you want? Quote, the clearer we are about what we want, the more likely it is that we'll get it, end quote. This is another really big idea. Marshall discusses the importance of clearly identifying what we want and learning how to clearly make requests to fulfill those desires as part of the fourth step in the process, making requests. Bottom line is simple. We can't make a clear request if we don't know what we want. It's a lot easier to complain about all the things that are wrong than to slow down, get clear on what we really want, and then make a very clear, positive request. This makes me think of David Emerald and his wonderful wisdom in The Power of TED. See those notes, where he articulates the difference between what he calls a victim orientation and a creator orientation. Whereas the victim is focused on all the things that are wrong, the creator focuses on what he or she would like, what they want. The primary way we make the shift from victim to creator is one very simple question. What do I want? That question offers a straight line path from suffering to empowerment. Anytime we're feeling less than great, we have an unmet need, whether that's in the context of a specific interaction with another individual or just more broadly speaking in life. So, are there any areas in your life where you're experiencing challenges? If so, what are you feeling? And what do you want? Remember, the clearer we are about what we want, the more likely it is that we'll get it. P.S. here, feeling anger, same questions. What's the unmet need? What do you want? Marshall has a whole chapter on anger. Check out this pearl. He says, quote, I see all anger as a result of life alienating, violence provoking thinking. At the core of all anger is a need that is not being fulfilled. Thus, anger can be valuable if we use it as an alarm clock to wake us up, to realize we have a need that isn't being met, and that we are thinking in a way that makes it unlikely to be met. All right, that brings us to the final big idea, connecting compassionately with ourselves. Quote, we have seen how NVC contributes to relationships with friends and family, at work, and in the political arena. Its most crucial application, however, may be in the way we treat ourselves. When we are internally violent toward ourselves, it is difficult to be genuinely compassionate toward others. When critical self-concepts prevent us from seeing the beauty in ourselves, we lose connection with the divine energy that is our source. Conditioned to view ourselves as objects, objects full of shortcomings, is it any wonder that many of us end up relating violently to ourselves? End quote. Marshall has a chapter dedicated to communicating compassionately with the person with whom we interact the most, ourselves. As he says, we're going to have a tough time communicating compassionately with others if we fail to do so with ourselves. He has a bunch of great ideas to help us cultivate self-compassion. His first recommendation? To avoid shooting on ourselves. Marshall describes the fact that, although commonly used by most of us, the word should is violent, because it implies a lack of choice and disempowers us. So, let's quit shooting on ourselves. Funny story, as I was preparing to create this note, I noticed that I said to myself, You should really include a section on not shitting on yourself. Yes, that is true. Here's one final gem. Marshall tells us, quote, another aspect of self-compassion I emphasize is in the energy that's behind whatever action we take. When I advise, don't do anything that isn't play, some take me to be radical, even insane. I earnestly believe, however, that an important form of self-compassion is to make choices motivated by our desire to contribute to life rather than out of fear, guilt, shame, duty, or obligation. When we are conscious of the life-enriching purpose behind the action we take, when the sole energy that motivates us is simply to make life wonderful for others and ourselves, then even hard work has an element of play in it. Correspondingly, an otherwise joyful activity performed out of obligation, duty, fear, guilt, or shame will lose its joy and eventually engender resistance. End quote. Well, here's to taking action out of the desire to contribute to life as we embrace the four components of NVC and joyfully participate in the flow of mutual giving from the heart. Well, there you go. That's a quick look at nonviolent communication. I hope you dug it. If you enjoyed this note, I think you'll also like the notes on daring greatly, the gifts of imperfection, self-compassion, the power of TED, and a complaint-free world. Marshall B. Rosenberg, PhD, is awesome. Learn more about him at cnvc.org. Now let's take a quick look at the sidebar quotes, some good stuff in there. Then we'll wrap it up. All right, these are all from Marshall, unless I mention otherwise. What I want in my life is compassion, a flow between myself and others based on a mutual giving from the heart. Two parts of NVC. One, expressing honestly through the four components. Two, receiving empathically through the four components. Here's a thought from the Bible, Matthew 7:1. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. For as you judge others, so you will yourselves be judged. Expressing our vulnerability can help resolve conflicts. He tells us empathy, emptying our mind and listening with our whole being. And finally, let's shine the light of consciousness on places where we can hope to find what we are seeking. There you go. Nonviolent communication. Really cool stuff. I hope you enjoyed that quick look at it. What'd you get out of it? Did anything land for you particularly strongly? What was it? How can you take that idea and make it a bigger part of your life starting today? Theory to practice. Let's embody these ideas. Hope you enjoyed. Hope you're doing great. Look forward to sharing more with you soon. Have another awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to brianjohnson.me to download more.